Sellers' expectations are still outpacing what the market can deliver. Stay right there, because we're going to talk about that. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Real Estate Realities with the Rebel Broker. My name's Robert Whitelaw, and I am the Rebel Broker. This music just makes me feel like I should be getting ready to spin up some smooth jazz or something. Anyway, welcome to it. Another edition of Real Estate Realities with the Rebel Broker. My name's Robert Whitelaw, and I am the Rebel Broker. Licensed real estate broker in the state of California, member of the National Association of Realtors. Still able to put on a show with only one functioning leg. You'd be amazed at all the little things you suddenly realized seemed so easy to do that suddenly are nearly impossible when you lose the painless use of one of your limbs, like sitting at a desk. Today's show's a little different, much like the last one, which was only a couple of minutes to let you know things had gone wrong last week. I don't have access to the usual room, the computer system that I do the show on, and I couldn't even get down there. I tried to do it and couldn't. I can't even sit in front of a desk because I can't bend the leg. The leg has to stay perfectly straight, and there's a lot of very complicated, stupid things that I've been dealing with for the last week. But I appreciate your patience. But here we are back again as early as I possibly could after getting my laptop ready to rock and roll with some audio recording in a way that I could actually be in a position where I'm not causing more pain. I hope y'all are doing well. Today we're going to talk a little bit about the growing disparity between what sellers are estimating what their homes are worth and then what the market is actually reflecting them to be worth in terms of what they're selling for. I think there are a couple of very interesting things to sort of take away from this. We'll talk about what the numbers are. This is I think the second time we've done a show like this, simply because we've got yet another month where the difference between those two things, what the market delivers and what sellers expected, continues to separate. And I think that what's interesting is not just to note that particular piece of data, but then to also think about out in the marketplace. How does that manifest itself in terms of affecting the buying and selling market? So it's absolutely one of those statistics that you can sort of use as a way to anticipate where things are going and what direction the markets are moving, or maybe not the markets, but at least determine the confidence level or certainty on the part of sellers as to what's going on with their house in terms of what they're likely going to get for it. And there's a few little cool tidbits that I'm going to lay out here, probably a little bit more useful to buyers in this case, buyers and investors. But we'll see if we can't come up with something reasonable to suggest to sellers in terms of how to manage these kinds of things. Because in every situation, there's always things that you can do, right? There's in a bad situation, there are ways to try to minimize the negative effects, which aren't always great choices. They don't always turn a lose into a win, but they may minimize the level of the lose, right? So, and if you absolutely got a must move in a marketplace where the sellers suddenly aren't in a great position, there are ways to sort of at least get the process done in a way that costs you as little as possible. And the same thing goes for buyers. And buyers have been in that seat for a little while now where they were having to jump through a lot of really difficult hoops in terms of just acquiring a property with sellers being in the driver's seat in so many marketplaces, which is still continuing today. Now, and remember what this number is, it's less about what the actual market value is, and it's more about what appraisers say they are. Remember, we had this conversation before where one of the biggest problems that folks face out there in the world, and we'll try to figure that out too. Does this tell us a real thing or does this tell us a made up thing? Because you never know. It may be one or the other, or it may be a combination of the two. But as we talked about last month, we've had yet another month where the disparity between the appraisal on a home and what a seller thought their home was worth or what the home was listed for ended up being large on the not good for the seller side, where appraisers came in below what the asking price or at least what the offer price was on a property. Now, this data all comes from Quicken Loans, so if you want to take a look at that, you can head on over there yourself. But there were appraisers in August estimated home values 2.65% lower than homeowners estimated the home values. Now, when we talked about this last time, the idea was that as we move further and further into the year, as other homes – because remember what we talked about. We talked about the fact that appraisers can only go off of homes that have actually sold. And when you have a marketplace where values are rapidly increasing – that tends to be difficult because you don't end up with a storehouse of solds over the last few months that are comparable that can support a higher sales price. Now, what's interesting about that is that I went ahead and – because I want to try and get a good perspective on this, right? Do we want to determine if this is something we should pay attention to because it's really happening or it's a real phenomenon or not? So let's tackle that one first, and then we'll talk about what some of those specifics number were and what we've seen historically over the previous months. So the first thing we want to sort of grok here is that this is the seventh consecutive month. August is the seventh consecutive month that this data has done this, where we've seen a sort of wobbling difference. We've seen it as high as a 3.24% difference down to a 0.27% difference. But in every case, it has continued to be this way, and it's also sort of trended towards the larger size in terms of these gradations being different. So what is defining this, right? Let's try to establish what our parameters are. I think the first one is what we've been talking about on this show now for over a year, that prices are relatively flat. But I think the perception on the part of sellers is that the market has been steadily increasing. And of course they have that opinion, right? We've talked about that a bunch of times, how the headlines, what everyone's pushing out in the media is that we're in the recovery, everything's better. And folks equate that to meaning that property values are higher, that with each consecutive month, things are getting better, which directly equals they should be able to get a higher price for their home. Not always the case, and I'm going to use my local marketplace to sort of point that out because the numbers are actually kind of interesting over the last few months. But it really boils down to is it an excessive level of optimism based on the media, or is it just that the appraisal folks really haven't been able to catch up in terms of the amount of properties that have sold in the last 90 days that actually support these higher prices? Now, if we look at it from that angle, right? So let's try to look at it totally from the appraiser's angle and figure they're going to look back 90 days and try to find comparables. Well, if we go back to August, and those are probably numbers that relate to early August, late July, we see that the average sales price actually kind of peaked from February to June, at least in my marketplace. Now, these are the stats for all of Santa Clara County, which arguably is what everyone – when everyone thinks of the improving real estate market, they're pretty much in the same sentence saying San Francisco, Santa Clara County, which when you break it down is a lot of the communities we've talked about before that are on these best markets lists like Sunnyvale, Santa Clara, San Jose. These are all communities within Santa Clara County. So if we look at those as an average, and even if we go in and we drill down to some of these most successful communities in terms of the markets, specifically Sunnyvale and Santa Clara, which have been on these lists that the media put out as great places to buy if you want to sort of protect your investment, I suppose, was the attitude they were coming at it with. Even in those cases, the average prices peaked out in February and have stayed relatively flat through all the way through June, and then we're down July and August and actually up a little bit in August. Now, I'm not going to do the September numbers because we don't have obviously an entire month. We only have 8 days worth of numbers. But the stuff that's closed in the first week in Santa Clara County is the highest of the year. But you know, it's too small a sample with there only being 8 days into the month. So I'm sure these numbers will normalize over the rest of the month. But the point being, we're not looking forward because remember, we're appraisers. We're looking back. They should absolutely have comparables for properties that are closing escrow in August and July. Because all the months preceding them, all of the 90 days preceding them, the average prices were all up. So what's causing this? I think the only thing – so it's not a – I don't think it's an appraisal-related thing in terms of the data. So what's the other side of that equation? The other side of that equation is perception or seller confidence. Sellers clearly were continuing to – as each month went by, they saw that home down the block that sold for $1 million. And that's the numbers we're talking about here. In Santa Clara County, the average price in August was $1.25 million, it looks like, maybe $1.21 million for the average price for a home. And prior to that, the peak during the summer came in June at about $1.3 million. So nice averages, right? But the point is that the number side of it, if you look at how appraisers do their job, the numbers side doesn't support it. So in other words, on an ongoing basis, if appraisers are looking back at the past 90 days, there are absolutely the average sales are all supporting a general increase. In fact, because we had lower average prices in July and August, it absolutely should have supported the conclusions of an appraiser for a higher price. But the other thing is also volume. You have to take into account how many homes were involved in this. Okay, so keeping our appraiser's hat on, now we've already focused on the average price side of it, which should have told us that appraisals going up was acceptable because prices were actually higher in the previous 90 days. So now let's talk about volume. Maybe there just simply aren't enough homes. Well, volume was at its peak in September of 2014, if we're looking back. But in the last 90 days, July of 2015 is right about when we hit the peak. And it actually steadily increased. The low point was December of 2014, and it just steadily increased all the way up to July. And then in August, we saw a decrease in that total number of homes. So, and in terms of the number of homes sold, the same general trend. So, and because remember, an appraiser isn't looking at homes that are just active in the market. They're looking at homes that have actually sold. Those same general numbers apply in terms of the trends. So the solds peaked out. Looks like solds peaked in June with July being just a little bit behind it. But the point being that there was more volume. So not only do the average price numbers indicate appraisal should have come out okay, but the number of homes that would have been available as comparables to compare them to is also increasing with each passing month. So if you're going back 90 days, there's no reason to look at any of the appraisal side of it to think that's where the fault is. The fault is there just aren't enough homes for folks to be able to do a comparable, or the past marketing data just doesn't support a higher price because prices were lower and they jumped up so significantly. You can't say either one of those two things, at least about Santa Clara County. My feeling is that this is a trend that transcends just Santa Clara County. I think what we're seeing is a confidence thing, because that's the other side. Now let's take off our appraiser hat and let's put on our seller hat. And if we consume the information that we've been fed over the last 9 months, everything's wonderful, right? The markets, everything's in recovery. Things are going well. Homes are selling like gangbusters. But here's the reality. Home prices are down. Sales volume is down by far more than inventory. And we've seen relatively stagnant prices, decreases in prices the last 2 months, stagnant prices over the entire selling season. But the mindset of the seller is everything's been getting better all the time. So they hear that their neighbor sold for X And they know that that happened 3 months ago. So they're thinking, oh, well, then we must be able to increase – ask much more than that for our house since it's later in the year, since more time has passed, et cetera. So it's completely a confidence thing at this point. And nothing is more delicate than confidence. And it gets shattered fast when someone has these – because here's the other side of it. Now that we've gone through the seller side – and you know, the seller's not being unreasonable. The seller's going off what they understand to be the case. They've been reading some of the popular articles we sometimes talk about here and then sort of debunk a little bit, try to add a little bit of reality to them. Now let's take it from the buyer's standpoint. Buyers still remember, apparently, a lot of the stuff that went on with the last downturn. Buyers have been more cautious. Buyer confidence is extremely low. And when we've talked about confidence in previous shows, we've noted that there's been a little bit of a difference between the confidence of the buyer side and the confidence of the seller side. Confidence seller side has been good. Confidence buyer side has been less so, with a lot of people talking about how they don't have very high expectations for where the economy is going. There's a lot of uncertainty out there. And when you blend all of this together, I think the folks who end up losing this tug of war are the sellers. Under the pressure of what we're already seeing as dropping prices, under the pressure of inventory sort of increasing because we're seeing more homes. We saw homes that are sort of going onto the market. We've had a slight decrease in the number of homes in inventory in terms of being active listings, but we've seen a much larger drop in the number of homes that are sold. So we're seeing the number of homes that are coming on the market aren't able to make up for the solds. So we're adding to inventory. Does that make sense? What does that equate to? Let's take the next step, right? We've talked about what buyers might be thinking. We've talked about what the appraisers were thinking. We've talked about what sellers were thinking. So now we sort of need to mash all that together and figure out which way this particular branch of the tree is going to go. Which way is it going to fall? I think that once sellers, and I think sellers are going to be the natural ones to get hit with this because this is the reality that they see. Buyers, I think, get a little bit more inoculated to things because you're seeing things initially on a website, you're seeing homes listed, but you know, buyers are also very tuned into how fast homes disappear from the list that they're looking at, right? The typical buyer, at least the typical buyer I work with, is subscribing to a daily update of properties that meet their needs. So they get an email whenever something changes, if a price changes on a home that meets their criteria that was already in the list, or if a new home gets added to the multiple listing service that meets their criteria, they get an email telling them to click on this link and it'll take them to their page to view the new listings. And I'm doing this as well. As I've stated, I would consider myself actively looking as a buyer to purchase property. I have several, right? I have a search running for investment properties that are multiples, at least two and no more than four. I'm not interested in going beyond a fourplex. I look for, now that I've got the Hawaii property going and making money, I'm liking that. I feel like I've got some good chops there. So I have another search going in areas that I think would be good for a potential investment property in terms of being a vacation rental as opposed to a long-term rental. I'm kind of enticed by that idea. So I've got these three different ones running, and the third one is for me as an individual, just for single family residential homes, with the possibility of me moving into that and then renting the home I'm currently in. So that's my mindset in terms of how I'm trying to walk the same path that you would if you're a buyer or an investor. I'm at least walking through the same steps you walk through on a daily basis. I'm not just describing to you what I think folks are going through. And it's interesting the impact that it makes when you go and you look at your list and realize, holy Mary, there are 10 new listings in this thing. And here's a listing I saw 30 days ago that's still on here. That's what I am seeing as a buyer of single-family residential homes, as a person who's shopping for single-family residential homes. And you know what? That list also includes townhomes and condos. I actually increased it a couple of weeks ago to those types of properties just to see what was out there. And while I have added those aren't the areas where I'm seeing these phenomenon happening. So there's a few things going on. One, buyers are suddenly getting a little bit of feedback through their searches that things aren't moving as fast. I've had a few people just casually say, hey, you know, it seems like the market's slowing down a little bit. Sellers are seeing that their home is staying on the market longer. For those folks that absolutely have to sell, you know, you need to separate your sellers out between the folks who are sort of looking to get the low-hanging fruit. Maybe they're out there and they're picking a high price and they're not willing to move from it because they don't really care if they move. Then you've got other sellers who maybe feel like who don't feel like but know that they do have to move. Maybe it's because it's a job. Maybe some other life change has occurred and they need to get out of their house. As these realities start to pull up and set up shop right on their front lawns, they're going to realize that something needs to change. Now, all of the data that we're seeing here, and remember, I'm using Santa Clara County as my petri dish. And just as a reminder, it's because that's considered one of the quote-unquote super healthy marketplaces, right? So you'll need to check your marketplace and see what the trends are because you may come to a different conclusion, particularly if you're someone looking to buy or invest or sell in these various areas. I think it's great for folks to really delve into some of these numbers because I think it gives you an insight into where things may be going. And in this case, I think what we're seeing is a recalibration of sellers' expectations. The takeaway from what we were talking about in terms of 7 consecutive months of disparity between appraisals and sellers, I think we can absolutely put a stake in the ground and say it is seller psychology that is causing that to happen. It's not that appraisers are out of whack. It's not that the appraisers don't have data that they can base increases on or all these other things because they can. It's simply sellers' expectations of what the market can deliver to them are outpacing what reality is. And with all we've talked about here, you should all just be going, yeah, you know what? That, given what we've talked about and the sort of stage that's being set by the media that focuses on real estate, that makes sense. If that's all you've been consuming is just sort of the headlines and the first paragraphs of a lot of these different stories, it's natural, I think, for sellers to jump into the marketplace being very optimistic about a very high price in a very short period of time. But now that's not happening. Now, back in March and April, when we saw, particularly in April, when we saw very tight inventories. Now, April was nuts. The inventory. And if this is for all of Santa Clara County, this varies from community to community. The same trend tends to be the same, but within Santa Clara County, there are some communities where this is completely out of whack. But again, as I've said before, the real estate markets are micro markets now. You can have completely different marketplaces just across one street in a lot of areas in Santa Clara County. But I'm trying to draw generalities here that you folks can learn from and use in your own marketplaces to come to conclusions of your own to determine whether or not these ideas make sense. But back in April, that's when things were the tightest. The inventory and solds number were very close to each other. So there was the perception was there was a lot of heat in the marketplace. Things were selling very quickly. And that has steadily gotten less so with each passing month and it has started immediately in May. In May, the gap between solds and active homes on the market grew. It grew again in June, stayed almost the same, but did grow a little bit. Then it grew quite a bit in July, and it grew by a gigantic chunk in August. So these are trends, right? We're not just looking at 1 week. We're looking at months worth of data going back for months. So what are our expectations? So here's the takeaway for all of my buyers, sellers, and investors out there on this data. Where are things going? Well, I think that the things that we weren't quite so confident about a month ago or 2 months ago, we can be far more confident about. I think winter, the coming months, the coming season is going to be a better time for buyers. I think you're going to have more choices. I think you're going to have less competition. And I think you're going to be able to drive better bargains for yourself in those months. And I think particularly when we hit November and December, you'll sort of weed out those sellers that were just looking to get that low-hanging fruit we've talked about, because those folks are simply in there to try to get the highest price possible, but they're not, it's not a I must sell situation for them. So those folks will probably take their house off the market so that they can enjoy Thanksgiving and Christmas without all the interruptions of trying to sell your house. That's going to be a great time. And that as a general rule is true all the time. There are exceptions. Last year turned out to not be quite that way, and the year before. The year before, I remember vividly, I had tons of different business going on at the Christmas, New Year's, or Thanksgiving season year before last in 2014. 2015, I, to be honest, I was less active then. I was handing off everything to my folks, so I wasn't really focusing on hands-on business at that particular time. But again, the amount of stuff that was going on that I could see going across my desk was lower, and the data that I was seeing in terms of what's going on in the city and the county was lower. But this year, I think, will be one of those years where you'll be able to absolutely take advantage of that usual trend, and perhaps even more so if we continue to see the discrepancy between the inventory and what's getting sold. And I think we will. As more transactions go through where we don't see homes selling in a week, as transactions go through where folks who are sellers who started actively paying attention to what's going on in their local market when they started listing realize that homes that listed at around the same time they did or maybe just before are still on the market as well. So the reality is that there's a couple of things we have to overcome. One is the seller attitude of my home is worth X, because the only real way for this problem to get solved for the sellers is for prices to be reduced or for tons more buyers to come into the marketplace. And frankly, I don't see that happening. I don't see suddenly a huge number of buyers jumping out of the woodwork to pop up and buy properties. It would be a seasonally unexpected thing to do. And given the low confidence levels we have seen now for the last 6 months or so, I just don't see it as a reality. So the only thing that's really going to affect it is for them to make their property more enticing to the buyers that are on the market. And since we're now in a situation where there's a little bit more competition for sellers, or there will be as we move further into winter, these folks are going to have to make their property more attractive. And the only thing they truly can control is the asking price. So folks are going to have to try to find a price that makes more sense or offer some other thing. Now, remember, the two things that buyers care about are price and terms. We can talk about some strategies as a seller on how you can try to still walk away with a little bit more with a higher competition situation. We'll talk about that in a second. But for you buyers, I would say that as it gets colder, do not look at that as your opportunity to hibernate more. But look at it as your chance to go out there and really find a great deal for yourself. I would say continue to broaden what you're willing to look for in terms of a property. Still be creative, but just up the amount of properties you're checking out in the coming months to see what kind of a deal you can get. Now, let's talk about sellers for a second. Now, what can you do? Now, first, I would say this trend I'm seeing is going to continue for the next few months. So I would say while we're still in September, do a full blitz if you can with your real estate agent. That means getting far more creative with your real estate agent. And I need you to think about all the various reasons why you bought your house in the first place and why you liked living there. Is there a really great place to fish nearby? Is there a great place to ride horses? Are the schools in your neighborhood better than another neighborhood nearby? Do you fly and there's a tiny private airport nearby where you keep your plane? Are you a boater and you've got great access to the docks? Are you a skier? And think of the reasons why you live there. Is it less sexy than that? Is it the commute awesome? You've managed to pick a neighborhood where getting to the freeway and getting where you want to go is super easy. Come up with all those reasons and write them down, and then figure out the flip side of that coin. Who is the person who's going to want that does not have it, but may want it, and where are they? Right? So good examples are when I had a situation where I was trying to sell a home that was in a completely depressed pricing bracket and the market in general was hugely depressed. I think I may have mentioned this one a couple of years back, but it was tough. These properties were staying on the markets for hundreds of days and I wanted to get this thing sold fast. So we're right near a small private airport. So what did I do? I went to the very high-end private airports up on the peninsula and up towards the Oakland side of the bay. And I just put flyers up there. I went to one of the meetings of the Private Pilots Association up in Palo Alto. I handed this information out and that drew a whole other group of folks because these are all things you're going to want to do. If your school is great, well, in your town, there are going to be schools that stink. So, and don't do elementary schools. And here's why. When folks buy a house, they usually will consider in their head the elementary school that they're going to be moving into. Unless the elementary schools in bordering areas are horrible, I wouldn't suggest this. What you want to do is focus on middle school and high schools. That tends to be something where the sellers, if they have children, if they're in an elementary school or in a high or in a junior high school, after a few years, they start thinking about high school and realizing that their kids will be forced to go to a really crappy high school. So if you have an area where your high school is particularly good, what you need to do is do a general mail, like physical mail, to the folks who live in the area where the crappy school is. Typically, you're going to want to look at 2- and 3-bedroom homes, something under what your home is or comparable to what your home is, and market to those folks, because someone who has a 5-bedroom house where yours is a 3 isn't likely going to want to buy down to get to a better school. But if you can find a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house in that area where those folks are really concerned about their 6th grade daughter who's going to be going to that really crappy high school in 2 or 3 more years, and you can offer them the best high school in the district just one exit down off the freeway or in the next town or whatever it may be. You know, these are the things. In other words, what I'm saying is, and don't do exactly what I just said, unless that example happens to exactly fit your situation. But what you want to do is find out what makes your home unique and then find out it's just a question of Googling in many cases, figuring out who the people are that will be drawn to that, who will suddenly think, wow, you know what? I wouldn't have to worry about my job because I'd be living in the same town. The commute wouldn't change because I'm living in the same general area. This would be an easy move because I can almost see the house I'm going to move to from where I currently live. You'd be amazed how often that happens to varying degrees. I've done it several times between Gilroy and Morgan Hill. Morgan Hill has a very challenged high school situation. Gilroy has what was a horrible high school situation, but now they have Christopher High School. So when I find myself in a situation where I'm trying to find buyers for a Gilroy home in that particular area where they would go to Christopher High School, I know right where I'm going to market. I'm going to market right to those folks in Morgan Hill whose kids are going to Live Oak because that's where they're going to want their kids to be. So just figure out what that thing is. And I would say for the next 30 days, hit that as hard as you possibly can. You want to get as many eyes on your property as you can, as many eyes as possible. The other thing you may want to do, and this is a little bit more challenging, and you're going to want to have a decent real estate agent representing you. We talked about what buyers are looking for. They're motivated by price, then they're motivated by what the home has to offer, which is some of what we just talked about. You finding folks by understanding what your home has to offer, understanding who you might want to market to. Next is the terms, because remember what's happening. Appraisals are kind of out of whack, right? And I think the truth is that appraisals aren't out of whack. So I don't think that's a valid statement, frankly. They're in whack with what the numbers say. They're just out of whack with the perception of sellers. But you as a seller, what you can do is offer to take back a note, do a second, do some seller financing. Now, here's the problem. It tends to be very difficult to make that a motivating factor right up in front of someone's face. Because no one is searching on whether or not there is seller financing available. What they're searching on is whether or not it's at a certain price, has a certain number of bedrooms and bathrooms. But let me tell you, if you can get into the description that the seller may consider financing, even if you in your head are thinking, I would never consider financing unless I had a ridiculous return. I'd want 8%. I wouldn't want it to be out for more than 5 years in length. Do it. Because it just may generate more calls. And those buyers may not like your terms, but it got those folks in the door. Is that bait and switch? No. You're absolutely willing to – you have to be willing to offer – the financing terms under some conditions. You have to set what that criteria is and have a chat with your real estate agent or even your loan person if you want to have them sort of walk you through the right way to set something up so that it makes sense. But you wouldn't do a 30-year thing. You'd do some shorter term thing, usually a 2-year, 3-year, 5-year, whatever term fits for you at whatever interest rate makes sense for you. But offer that as something to enhance the terms, right? To make it a little bit easier for the person to afford it. Now, the one great thing about that is it gives the buyer a buffer so that if the home doesn't appraise for whatever reason, they can that amount that they'd normally have to come up with in addition to make up the difference, you may be able to make up in seller financing. Right? Does that make sense? Now, investors, I'd really have the same advice for you that I would for my buyers. I'd say redouble your efforts during this season. If you're someone who's bought before, you probably already do that. I know I always make a point of really getting out and doing a lot more digging when I get into the seasons when other folks aren't. It's a question of just not doing what everyone else does, right? If you want to miss the crowds, you don't follow the crowd to wherever they're going. And the crowds tend to dissipate in the wintertime, so that's when I'm going to show up. So that's really it. I think that gives us an idea of where things are going. And this is one of the few shows I've done in a while. I used to be very the prognosticating guy. I'd take out that crystal ball and I would just rub the hell out of it to try and come up with what I thought's going to happen coming up. Over the last year and a half, data has been so all over the place and things have been so crazy. It's been tough to kind of pin things down. This is one I'd actually be willing to put my money on and strongly suggest that you use the same data I just talked about. And what we've been talking about is, over the course of months, what's going on with average sales prices in areas? What's going on with the active number of homes in inventory? What's going on with the number of homes sold during the same period of time? Plot those two things together. See what kind of trends you can spot. For every home that sells, how many are on the market? These are great things to determine what kind of competition levels you're looking at. And continue to shave it down till you're in a comfort zone that you're okay with. I'm looking at all of Santa Clara County. If I'm considering buying an investment property in Morgan Hill, I am sure enough not going to look at the data for Santa Clara County. I'm going to look at the data for Morgan Hill because that's just going to be more focused on the area I'm interested in. You should do the thing. And any realtor that you're working with should be willing to do this kind of number crunching with you. And I think it's a great exercise. Even if, let's pretend that you would love to invest, you'd love pursuing some of these things, but it scares the hell out of you. Then just do this. Just go through the motions of collecting the data as you grow in terms of your understanding of what you're looking at, as your comfort level increases. At some point, you're probably going to reach a comfort level where you're willing to jump in and say, hey, you know what? I'm comfortable enough with these numbers. I'm comfortable enough with what I believe over the last 6 months, what I saw, what I thought was going to happen, and what did happen. I trust my instincts at this point. I'm going to go ahead and jump in. So the only way you can get yourself more comfortable with something is to expose yourself to it more. And this is a great way to start because there's tons of data out there that you can poke around at and see if it makes sense for you to take action one direction or another. All right, folks. Feels good to be back in the saddle, if maybe a little painful. I guess if we were sort of putting it into context, I'd be riding side saddle because the idea of actually having to sit like that just scares me to even think about it with this leg. But I do appreciate you taking the time to listen to the show. Please feel free to head on over to www.therebelbroker.com for backup shows, the archives of the shows. Still no word from Block Talk Radio on when my RSS feed will be released from their clutches. I'm still holding out for that. I got an encouraging word today that it may happen soon. So yay, I guess. But there'll be updates to that. And those of you on iTunes right now are the only ones who are affected by that. So there may be a weird day where suddenly as soon as your graphic changes, the icon for the show changes, you'll know that you're pointing to the new RSS feed and everything will be fine. So, and once that happens, there will be no more posting on Blog Talk Radio. I will post several shows on Blog Talk Radio that will just be telling folks, don't come to Blog Talk Radio for the show anymore. Go over to therebelbroker.com. And of course, if you'd like to show your support for the show, please go to iTunes, subscribe there, and write a review. The reviews do apparently work some magical statistical mojo over at iTunes so that the show gets higher placed. So anything you can do to sort of help the show out is profoundly appreciated, and that's absolutely falls under the category of something that's going to help the show. So thanks again, everyone. Talk to you tomorrow.